Welcome to the Well One Connection, a podcast from Huron Regional Medical Center. The right care is right here.
I am here today on the Well One Connection podcast with Dr. Anthony Lowen, general surgeon at New Life Clinic here in Huron. Welcome back.
It's always great to be on the show.
It's been a little while. Our reason for talking today is because it is GERD Awareness Month. There are some treatments and some options that you can provide locally on a surgical level for GERD. But first, for those who might not know who you are, if you want to just give us a little rundown of who you are, Dr. Lowen.
Sure. So my name is Anthony Lowen, and I grew up in Huron years and years ago. I graduated from high school at James Valley Christian School, and then I went to undergrad and then medical school and surgical residency, and then eventually came back. I've been practicing here for about 4.5 years in general surgery, and I have a wife and 4 boys, and we love rural South Dakota. We love raising our kids here, and we're just really happy to be back.
Great. And so just a general overview, and when those of us who might not know, we're going to talk about GERD or acid reflux today and some options for that, but what do you do as a general surgeon in kind of a rural area?
It's pretty darn broad how out in the rural area, pretty much any procedures that are medically needed that primary care providers don't do. Probably the big things I do are endoscopy, so colonoscopy and upper GIs or upper scopes, and then pretty much any surgery in the abdomen, whether it's a hernia repair, removing the appendix, removing the gallbladder. And then certainly a bunch of clinic-based things like skin surgeries, skin biopsies, removing skin cancer, and then some radiology-driven things like biopsies under ultrasound guidance, mammogram biopsies, breast biopsies, just a huge wide range of things that require procedures and interventions that your primary care provider might not be able to do.
Yes. So a great way to know might be to ask that primary care provider, hey, is this something that I might be able to do locally? Because oftentimes you can do that right here.
Yep, for sure.
Okay, great. So the reason we're here, it is GERD Awareness Month in November, which is interesting because what is GERD first, and why do we need an awareness month for it?
Yep. So GERD is just an acronym for gastroesophageal reflux disease. And it simply means stuff that's down in the stomach is coming back up into our esophagus or our food tube that connects our mouth to our stomach. The biggest way that manifests is in a symptom such as heartburn, chest pain, or the feeling of regurgitation, feeling like food or acid or something is coming all the way up to the back of the throat. You have to swallow it back down. But far and away, the most common symptom is heartburn. There are some secondary symptoms like chronic throat clearing, chronic cough, an acid taste in the mouth. Those are less common, but certainly could be related to GERD or to reflux disease.
If I might be experiencing those, and maybe I know that I've had what people might call heartburn, or maybe I've experienced the symptoms of that, or maybe I haven't, and I have some of those lesser known symptoms. What is the first step that I should take as an individual? I probably am not going to come directly to you as a general surgeon for that.
So most people find their way by word of mouth or by friends and family that just going to the pharmacy and buying over-the-counter medications like Tums or Maalox or Pepcid or Larry the Cable Guy used to have an ad out about omeprazole or Prilosec. Mm-hmm. So just those over-the-counter medications, and those have varying different activities and varying different levels of symptom management, but all of them reduce acid in the stomach so that when it does come back up, it doesn't burn the esophagus and patients don't have symptoms. That's the first thing that people go through. When those medications start to not work or they're not working as well, typically patients bring it up to their primary care provider. At that point, oftentimes they're prescribed PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, omeprazole, pantoprazole, and those are really good medications to suppress acid in the stomach. There are some patients who they get put on those and it doesn't completely take away their symptoms, or it makes them better, but they still have it breakthrough symptoms once in a while. Those patients typically get sent for further evaluation with an upper endoscopy or sent to me to further discuss symptoms of GERD.
Okay. So along with those medications that I might have to try, are there some food choices, lifestyle modifications? Obviously, you're in general surgery and you're not in primary care, but are there some things we can try as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm really glad you brought that up, because oftentimes we just skip over that. We just go for the easy thing, the easy pill. But the first step in reflux management is actually exactly what you said, lifestyle modifications. There are patients, will, if they have reflux long enough, they'll discover their trigger foods. Now, those things are, I tell patients there, it's like the best things that you like to eat. So things like tomato bases, chocolate, caffeine, alcohol, citrus foods, fatty foods, they're all triggers that are common in causing GERD in some people. Some people, they can eat all the chocolate in the world and never have reflux, but if they eat tomato base on a pizza, they're going to have reflux and they're going to pay for it. So lifestyle modifications, avoiding those trigger foods. The second thing is a big one that's really effective in treating GERD is weight loss. If we think about our stomach, it's a thing that holds food. And if we have a lot of central weight pushing on that stomach, that will actually lead to reflux. It's just a simple physics thing. And if we decrease the pressure on that stomach with weight loss, we actually have better control of our symptoms. Those are the two main things. Of course, things like avoiding smoking that causes the lower esophageal sphincter to relax and increases the risk of GERD. When patients lay down at night, oftentimes gravity doesn't help keep things down in the stomach anymore, so they end up sleeping up on a couple pillows or on an incline. I have some patients who come and they like, I have to sleep in a recliner every night just because if I lay flat, reflux comes up and really irritates my, gives me heartburn and I can't sleep. So absolutely, lifestyle modifications. A lot of patients discover that by trial and error on their own, but certainly there can be some guidance by your PCP, or I talk to patients about this all the time, about those lifestyle modifications.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. So those are some great things to try first along with those steps. So perhaps I'm someone with just really severe GERD, or I've tried these things and maybe they're no longer working. But is that something I can talk to my provider and say, and I think maybe a primary care provider you've been with for a number of years or time of trial and error of these things might say, okay, I think it's time now to talk about surgical intervention.
Yep.
And when it's time to talk about that, what are your first conversations with those people? There's always the benefit and the risk, right?
Starting the, we call it medically refractory reflux disease or medically refractory GERD. You're on your pills, they're not working, or maybe you're on PPIs and you've been on them for so long that they're getting less effective, or you just don't want to take a pill every day. You don't want to take that omeprazole every day. The first step is to assess the severity of your reflux and assess for the structural abnormalities, or the why does that valve not work anymore? The first step is to assess that, and that's with a scope down the mouth. That's an outpatient procedure. It's done here at the hospital. It's done under sedation. You're asleep and comfortable. A camera goes down. It assesses for that reflux barrier, that barrier in between the stomach and the esophagus. Because at the end of the day, the pills just cover up the symptoms. They suppress the acid. They don't actually fix the valve. They don't actually fix the structural component that keeps acid down in the stomach. They just suppress the acid. So when it does come up, it doesn't cause symptoms. It doesn't burn as bad. And with that scope down the mouth, we get a good look at the valve. We evaluate the structural components of it. We can see secondary signs of GERD, such as esophagitis or inflammation of the esophagus. We check for precancerous changes from chronic reflux disease. We also oftentimes will leave behind a wireless acid sensor that stays in the esophagus for 4 days. And that gives us a printout and a readout of actually how much acid you're having over those 4 days. Based on the structural abnormality, biopsies, if we take any, and then that acid reflux profile, we look at those things and we can talk about, is anti-reflux surgery something that you would benefit from? How much improvement can we expect to get, and discuss that? From there, then we talk about the different types of surgery. Now, the barrier to reflux is twofold. One is the hiatus, or people have heard, I've got a hiatal hernia. That can be difficult to conceptualize because you can't feel it like any other hernia, like a hernia at your belly button or in your groin. You cannot feel a hiatal hernia because it's a hernia that goes from the stomach up into the chest space. And that actually moves the valve up into the chest, whereas there's a natural negative pressure area. That makes the valve very ineffective. We can also assess to see how strong that valve is outside of the hiatal hernia. Those two barriers to reflux have to be corrected in order to effectively control reflux. Now, when we talk about surgery, there is only one real way to fix a hiatal hernia, and that's done laparoscopically here in the hospital. It's typically an outpatient procedure. Again, we fix that hiatal hernia. From there, we also have to do a procedure that strengthens the valve, strengthens the lower esophageal sphincter. And that can be done a couple different ways. The tried and true method is the fundoplication, where you take the top part of the stomach and wrap it around the lower esophagus. It creates a nice strong one-way valve. We've been doing that in surgery for probably, I don't know, 50 years or something. It works really good at controlling reflux, but does have some side effects. And that's where a lot of people that have them will tell everybody, oh, I hate it. I can't burp. I can't throw up if I need to. I'm always bloated because I can't burp. If I drink soda or carbonated beverages, it's going to make me so uncomfortable. And that's true. That is a big risk of that. So a lot of us in anti-reflux surgery and foregut surgery have really pushed away from that because you're trading one problem for another problem. There's a couple new methods out there. When I say new, we've been doing them for like 15, 20 years. But one of those is the Lynx device. So instead of doing that wrap, we put a ring of magnets around the lower esophagus that sits loosely around that valve, like a bracelet on your wrist. It doesn't squeeze the valve. It's not tight
It's
on
not
the
like it
valve.
snaps shut.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it just sits there loosely and it supports the valve in the closed position. Now, when you swallow or when you need to burp, those magnets will pop open and they'll let food down. They'll let air up if you're burping, but they won't, if you're relaxed, they won't let acid come back. The second item is something called the TIF or the transoral fundoplication. That's where a specialized device goes over our endoscope. And after we fix the hiatal hernia, we go down with the scope. And this specialized device manipulates the valve and it doubles the thickness and doubles the length of the valve using special fasteners. And that's really hard to describe. So certainly you can Google it. And I've got several brochures that we talk through this, but that's actually a very good option for patients as well. And of course, there's the tried and true fundoplication. We did several of those in training, dozens and dozens, but since I've been in practice, we really have gotten away from those. I've only done a couple of them in the last number of years just because there's other methods that are more developed and carry less side effects.
Sure, maybe just as effective, but you don't have to deal with the same
Correct.
side effects. So great.
Correct.
Okay. And I'm assuming that maybe the recovery period for all of these is fairly similar. Is that true? Or is there a longer recovery period for one over the other?
Not really. The meat and potatoes of this surgery is repairing that hiatal hernia. That's where the most disruption of the tissue happens. Now, because of that, the beauty of the diaphragm is that we don't have pain receptors there, which makes it actually not a very painful surgery at all. But as you're going out about your patients recover really quickly, they go back to their regular activities. If they strain or stretch or they pull something really heavy, there can be a stretch and a pull on that repair. Patients aren't going to feel that because they don't have pain receptors there. So we're very conservative with the lifting restrictions. So it's about a 6 week period of no heavy lifting, so no lifting anything greater than 15 to 20 pounds. No kind of strenuous basketball, football, contact sports, things like that. Certainly being up walking and doing regular activities, light housework throughout the day, it's fine, but no heavy lifting.
Okay.
The other piece is that while your esophagus is getting used to having a stronger valve, there are some dietary restrictions. And that kind of depends on which type of a surgery you have, a Lynx versus a TIF. But there are some dietary restrictions that help that valve heal and help that valve heal correctly so that you'll have long-lasting reflux control and decreasing in those side effects.
Okay, wonderful. As we learn about this and as we close, have you talked to patients? Do you get to follow up, obviously, with these patients?
Yep.
Have you seen amazing changes in the way that they're living their lives because of this change, and they don't have to deal with that pain or that irritation of the reflux anymore?
Yep, the results can be very dramatic. I see patients, even if everything's going great, I see them back at 2 weeks, 6 weeks, and 6 months.
Okay.
There are patients who are 100% reliant on their PPIs. They have to take it every day or they will pay for it. They have breakthrough symptoms, and by either the day of surgery or by 2 weeks, they're off their PPIs 100% and they have no reflux symptoms. And they can eat the things that they couldn't eat before, mm-hmm. and they don't have reflux. It's not, in some ways, it can be a life-saving surgery because it can prevent the long-term risks of acid reflux and developing esophageal cancer. But the biggest dramatic improvement that we see is in reflux control and activities of daily life, and patients have a real dramatic improvement.
Wonderful. Certainly appreciate you sharing all of this great information, and we'll see if we can link some of the TIF information and some of those videos as well on your page so that people can come check those out. If patients have questions of you specifically about the surgery, how can they get a hold of you? What's the best way? They can call you at New Life Clinic and chat with your nurse, perhaps, to see if an evaluation is the right thing for them.
Yep, for sure. We're on 3rd Street on the other side. Our back door and the back door of Huron Clinic are right across the alley. So certainly you can call the clinic. It's 605-352-2117. And speak with my nurse or really anybody about setting up an appointment or a consultation to talk about reflux symptoms. Like I said, the first thing you have to do is assess the severity before we talk about surgery. It's not something we just jump in and we're going to do surgery. We want to be really intentional. We want to discuss the benefit you'll have from surgery versus the risk of the surgery. It's not something you just walk in and we schedule it for next week, but certainly is something that we assess and we discuss.
Great, great. So they can certainly reach out to you there and they can find your profile on the web. We'll link that in our podcast information. And then also could just have a good conversation with their primary care provider as well and ask them about the options for them.
For sure.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks for joining us again.
Yep, always good to be here.
Thanks for listening to the Well One Connection. This podcast is informational only and not intended to replace the advice of your healthcare provider. Huron Regional Medical Center, online at huronregional.org.